Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Hugh Weber is the host of the Potluck Society. You can find the podcast wherever you normally find your podcasts, or you can listen online, listen.sdpb.org. He joins us every week at this time with a new potluck guest, Hugh Weber, on the phone. Welcome.
Hi, Lori.
All right. Who do we have this week? This is one of the fastest growing companies in South Dakota, and I have not heard of it until right now.
Right. Sometimes you need to really scratch around and search for stories. Other times they're just hiding in plain sight. I think that the gentleman I'm going to share with you today, Matt Paulson, the founder of MarketBeat, may be the best kept secret in the recent business community. You know, he's built an organization that is not only the fastest growing privately held company in South Dakota, but it's part of a network of websites that receives over 4 million page views a month, which is exciting. Wow. He chairs the Falls Angel Fund. He's written 8 books on personal finance and entrepreneurship. But he's not the prototypical entrepreneur or business success story. He's unassuming. He's humble and generous, and he knows what he loves about business. So I had him introduce MarketBeat, his company, and talk about his passionate focus.
I have a business called MarketBeat that's kind of my main thing that makes 90% of the money that feeds my family. But what that is, it's a financial media company, probably the most boring kind of business you could think of. But what it is, it's effectively a personalized version of the Wall Street Journal for investors based off their investments. So, you know, let's say I only invest in South Dakota companies, so I want to put money into Daktronix and Raven or something like that. And then I could get the news for those companies and nothing else in my email every morning. So, you know, to keep up with, you know, my two stocks, I don't have to go to Google Finance, Yahoo Finance, all these other sites that investors go to, you know, probably 10 of them in any given day to see what's going on. You know, we kind of boil that down into an email and we just make it a lot easier for people to keep track of their investments. So, you know, it's a lot of, you know, most of my customers are 60 to 80 year old men who don't know how to use an app on their smartphone, but they know how to use their email. And it's a interesting audience, but it's, you know, turned into a great business. You know, we've been on the Inc. 5000 list a couple years. You know, there's me and 3 other people, make a ton of money, wildly profitable, and it's just become a great business. But, you know, MarketBeat is, I wouldn't say it's the be all end all of like who I am as an entrepreneur. I love ideas that are scalable and also just have really high leverage. Like, I have another business called Go-Go Photo Contest that helps animal shelters raise money. But all it is a piece of software that animal shelters can use to run a photo contest to raise money for their animal shelter. And, you know, we keep 8 or 9% of the money raised. But, you know, it's not a whole lot of work and, you know, brings in a couple hundred grand a year. So I really like ideas where there's just maybe not a physical product involved. You know, where we can do some kind of marketing at scale, maybe a direct marketing campaign, or where I can have kind of a process and take a whole lot of people through that same process without reinventing the wheel every time it's done. So like Go-Go Photo Contest, you know, we have maybe 200 contests a year, but, you know, it's the same software they all use. It's not like we're doing anything special for any of them. So ideas like that are really what I get excited about.
He makes this sound so simple,
right?
And the fact that he's grown this multi-million-dollar business with, you know, three staff members. Hmm. But, you know, one of the pieces that he talks about that we'll share in the podcast is he came from a pretty average background, a police officer father, a librarian mother. They just had access to computers very early. It was something that differentiated him maybe from other young people, and it really allowed him to grow.
Hmm. Fascinating, just the way he talks about his business and sort of all this money going back and forth, and it's kind of a small thing to him.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's insignificant to him, the scale of the business, and he's certainly proud, but I think that he has other priorities than just the money. You know, when I another part of the conversation that'll be in the podcast, I asked him about his average day, and he talked about this extraordinarily busy day. And at the end, I said, "You didn't mention work. You know, like there's a focus other than the work. There's a broader community. I think there are a lot of myths about entrepreneurs, but one that dominates that we'll listen to here in this next clip is that they love risk and raising and spending other people's money. So I asked, kind of presumptuously, I asked Matt about the risks that he's taken.
You know, I've never taken a lot of risks in business. I typically only spend money if I'm sure that it's going to, you know, make a return on that investment or if it's something I just need to do. But I started the business with literally $0 in 2006. I had a blog on blogger.com that cost me nothing. Started writing. I tried to get it on like dig.com and places like that where I could get some attention, and I had some ad money. And then like once I had some ad revenue, then I bought a hosting account. And you know, I've never put a dollar of my own money into the business, which, I mean, it's always paid for its growth with revenue and profit. And you know, there's kind of the whole motto of, I'm going to raise money, I'm going to start a business, I'm going to spend a bunch of other people's money and build something really leveraged. And you know, for myself personally, I've never gone down that route because, you know, I like cash flow businesses that throw off money, and you know, some of that money I take home, some of that money I put back into the business. And but it's really been the same probably philosophy since. And it really came out of a philosophy of scarcity, because when I started this thing in college, I just didn't have any money. So like, I couldn't buy a hosting account if I wanted to. So it was, all right, what's the cheapest way I can do this? And you know, since then, you know, maybe I've loosened up a little, but you know, we don't spend a lot of money at MarketBeat. I mean, we, you know, out of every dollar that, you know, the company brings in, we probably keep 85% of it. And it's just, you know, there's lots of stuff we could spend money off of, but I found in many cases you don't need to if you kind of be creative about, you know, what you do. Like for example, you know, I have a customer service person named Stevie, works for me 20 hours a week, and so one thing, she's not available to take people's phone calls 24/7 because she only works 24 hours a week. So, you know, what do? We just don't do phone support, and some people don't like that. And it's like, well, then don't be our customers. So we, you know, we'll do whatever over email and chat that we can do to help people. But, you know, for a product that's $16 a month, it's like, I'm not going to take your phone call. Sorry. We just don't do that. So by saying no to some things that are pretty common in a business, you know, we can do things a lot more creatively and a lot more cheaply and still get them done. It's just maybe not in the way that people would expect.
And that goes back to the work week and how he spends his time. Hugh, tell me more about that.
That's right. Another myth is that entrepreneurs sacrifice personal life and work that 100-hour week. And so I like Matt's perspective on this.
I don't like it, for one. I think it's counterproductive. I think people that are working 100 hours per week on anything are probably pretty inefficient at what they do and are focusing on the wrong things. I think pretty much anybody can build a business in 40 hours if you're focusing on, you know, actually talking to customers and really focusing on the things that will create a business, like sales and product development and marketing. But if you get sidetracked into saying, oh, let's go listen to 20 TED Talks and think that's me working, and, you know, it's not. It's, you know, people, I don't think you need to work 100 hours a week. Like, I could do MarketBeat in 20 hours a week if I really wanted to. So it's either people are bad at delegation, they're bad at outsourcing, they're just taking too long to do stuff. I mean, there's probably some other issue that needs to be turned over when somebody's working that hard. I don't see it as a badge of pride. I mean, if you think about it, it's like, you know, why are you starting a business? It's because you want freedom for yourself and for your family. And why enslave yourself to working 100 hours a week if that's what you're trying to create?
I love that, Hugh. Maybe you're just not good at some of this stuff that you should be doing, delegating and planning.
And he talked about that at length. When he does something a number of times and realizes it's going to be part of the process, he determines whether he's the best at it or whether he should outsource it to someone that is.
Right.
But Lori, I know you might be thinking, you're thinking, wait, this is the potluck society. Is Hugh going to go a full week without talking about connection?
No, I know you better than that, Hugh. So
don't worry at all. Matt talked about that too.
I started the LLC that holds my business in 2008. And probably for the first 6 years of that, I was really an island off by myself. I didn't really know any entrepreneurs. It was kind of a lonely existence, frankly. You know, I had a nice little business that was growing, but I didn't really know anyone else that was doing it. I had podcasts to listen to, and that was really my only connection to the outside world. And then I started to run into, you know, some people that just had an entrepreneurial mind and were doing stuff like that locally. You know, I think of John Meyer, I think of Will Bushy, a couple others like that. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not the only person doing technology entrepreneurship in Sioux Falls. So, you know, maybe I could get some of that connection that I've been missing for years If I try to build, you know, work to grow some community locally. And at first, you know, I got a little bit involved. I started going to a few events, and you know, there is kind of a gap in some of that. And I thought, well, I have a lot of free time. I could do some of this. So about a year ago, I started helping out with the Million Cups. I do a lot of the back end stuff on that now. The Angel Fund kind of came out of that. And just, you know, I try to create opportunities for people to connect in the entrepreneurial world, to think about entrepreneurship together, because I didn't have that. And I still want that for myself, but I also want it for other people, because how many kids are there that are working on stuff that have nobody to get guidance from, or nobody to talk to or bounce their ideas off of, that could be very successful with the right kind of mentor, or just even people to talk about their ideas with.
Hugh, let's dig into this idea of connection and then pair it with the idea of not working 100 hours a week. You know, he says, well, I've got some free time, so I've got some time to connect. Have you seen other people who have taken connection, you know, to an extreme where they feel like, I need a ton of time to this, I have to spend all my time connecting and networking? Is that something that you've thought of before?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of intentionality, and I think that's important. I think Matt's someone who treasures and values his time because he knows it's a one-for-one exchange. If he's not with his kids or his family, his wife, he's with someone else, and he's making a judgment call on where to spend that time. So it's not that he's a prolific networker. I think it's that he recognizes the value of conversation and other human beings and community. Mm-hmm. So I think the one thing I would caution against, and I talk a lot about this, when I speak to civic groups and chambers, is that networking is not necessarily network building. Networking, I often say, is an excuse to have an adult beverage and get rid of old business cards. But network building, actually building relationships, is something more nuanced and requires much more intention, which I think Matt does remarkably well. I always feel like when I want to sit down with Matt, just as another human being, that I better have a point, that it better not be just kind of free range chit chat. Not that he's deeply kind. He's just a wonderful human being, but that I come with an intent, even if that intent is just catching up.
So in your experience, Hugh, how much time do those sort of relationships and that kind of relationship building really take? I know you can't probably, you know, percentage it out, but, you know, how does that fit into your overall, you know, business plan?
Well, I think it's determining who, and not in some sort of opportunistic or manipulative sense, but who is important to the business that you're growing, or the organization or community that you're developing. And then investing time in those individuals. Try not to kind of shotgun approach it and spread out the time you have for relationship building across thousands of people. Rather find that dozen that are important to you as a human being, as a person individually, but then also important to your business, and making sure that those are the folks that you invest in. Remember their birthdays, you know, recognize when they're having challenges, their struggles, and be willing to support both their kind of burdens and their dreams. And I think that in business, especially with the digital kind of revolution, we tend to be much more of that shotgun approach of let me seed 200 relationships and hope to develop, instead of the high touch, high cost, high risk investment in individuals.
Obviously, too, Matt Paulson in his books and then in his networking time seems to be interested in giving back. He has an MA in Christian leadership from Sioux Falls Seminary, among other things. How much does his faith sort of drive how he handles his business and how he handles connection?
Well, I think it's significant in how he lives his life. You know, I'll say that it's one of those situations that it's somewhat cliched that we can recognize faith or spirituality through acts often more than words, and I think that's how it is with Matt. I don't know that I've ever had him be too explicit or upfront or aggressive about his faith, but it's clear, I think, in the way that he engages people. And you know, he recognized he couldn't have every coffee meeting that came along, so he saw it as an opportunity to write the books to make sure the things he had learned could be shared. There's really a sense of wanting to make sure that others have the same benefits that he's had and continues to have. And, you know, he talked about how, you know, the average 12-year-old these days can do a lot of what he's done by finding those heavily leverageable and scalable businesses that just, you know, leverage the tool set. And he doesn't see himself as the smartest guy in the room, maybe just the guy that's worked the hardest and been most intentional.
All right. You can find full episodes of the Potluck Society on our website, listen.sdpb.org, or go on your portable device and look it up on iTunes and other places and download it and subscribe. Hugh Weber, thanks so much.
Thank you, Laurie.